Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here for another episode of Beers with Chad. Today I am joined by Miami Dolphins wide receiver, my friend, my athlete of the last decade plus, River Craycraft. We talk about River's path from high school as a two-star recruit to being an all Pac-12 wide receiver at Washington State to then an undrafted free agent bouncing around the NFL, being cut 14 times, the struggles of NFL life on the bubble, to then finding a home with the Miami Dolphins, how Mike McDaniels has influenced his career, how his wide receivers coach Wes Welker has influenced his career, the high points, the low points, all that stuff. So enjoy this interview with River. You know, this is an experience that most of the NFL is living an experience more like what River's dealing with. It's not just the guys who are stars and making hundreds of millions of dollars. So I think he has a lot of great insights and a lot of great heart in this story. As always, Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. You can use code BEERS at juggernautai.app to get fully customized powerlifting training that grows and adapts with you and your feedback. So save on your subscription by using code BEERS. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Chad. Rev, what's up, brother?
What's up, dude? How you doing?
Good. I haven't seen you in a couple weeks. This is a little rare.
I know. Well, I got a home gym in my garage now, so.
Dude, everyone be doing home gyms now. Huh. Philippe, home gym. Aubrey, home gym. You, home gym. Naaman, home gym. I'm stuck with Nick and Danilo as like my guys who come. And Cub and some other MMA guys you haven't met yet, but you do have a new home gym as a home owner.
I do.
Part of your busy off season life.
Ooh man, it's been hectic putting everything together, unboxing things, running to the dump, and trying to furnish the place. It's new. It's exciting. It's got my attention right now. About ready to leave for Miami, so got to set that aside for a second and get back to reality with football and come back to it after.
So what's typical day in the life NFL offseason for you?
I'd say it's pretty relaxed. I mean, a lot of the guys that I know, they like to kind of like hit their training in the mornings. Some guys are early guys, some guys are not. I myself, like, I don't love training at the 6 a.m. stuff. You know, this is kind of my time to catch up on sleep throughout the offseason. So I'll usually train like 8 a.m. or something like that. Usually I'll start with the lift, and then I'll go to the run, depending on what the lift is, what the run is. Those kind of switch throughout the week. But usually my days, training-wise, like on the field or in the weight room, are kind of like 8 to noon. And then after that, it's like recovery stuff. You got physical therapy, if you got little bumps and bruises going on. Then usually the afternoons are pretty open. You know, you can golf, and you know, you can cook, grill up, whatever you want to do, but it's kind of what I like to do.
You've been running routes much these last couple of weeks?
I haven't ran a ton the last couple of weeks because Tua was out here a few weeks ago, kind of like scheduled my training on the field around him being out here. And as I've gotten older in my career, I've kind of learned to, you know, protect the body a little bit more. And, you know, I don't always need to necessarily be running and cutting and trying to be as explosive as I can all the time. You know, I kind of pick my moments in the off season. So when QB1's out here, yeah, we're gonna turn up. But when he's not out here, it's more spot catching, it's more coasting through routes, making sure your footwork's right.
And your normal group out here, who are you throwing with?
There's a whole bunch of guys out here. SoCal's kind of a hot spot for quarterbacks. I mean, the quarterbacks that have been out here lately, Zach Wilson's been out here, Jalen Hurts, Jacob Eason has been out here. So you get current guys, you get guys that are free agents, you get the whole thing. James Winston was out there last week. So you kind of get a variety of guys, and I've kind of been able to work with a bunch of different guys, which has been awesome for learning. You get to learn their offenses, you get to learn how they like to run routes, and you get to catch footballs from elite quarterbacks.
Is there guys who are more like secretive about what they do or their process? Or
for sure. Yeah, no, everybody's different. I think like running with your own quarterback is very different than anyone else, but because you guys are naturally on the same page with the offense. But, you know, when you throw with other guys, not to call it any names, but like sometimes when you throw with guys, they'll kind of be a little bit more reserved. Like they kind of like to do it maybe from a receiver perspective. I like to adjust to the quarterback. Sometimes they like to adjust to the receiver. So, you know, I'll be very specific about, hey, how do you guys want to run this route? You guys want to start on the outside edge of the numbers, the inside edge? Is it your third outside step? Is it going off yards? Is it depth? What is it? And sometimes they're kind of just like, just, you know, 8 to 10 yards, break in, and I'll hit you. And then other guys are kind of like, all right, it's your third outside step. I want you to come in at this angle. And they're way more specific, which is kind of what I like, but got to be able to balance both and, you know, kind of just adapt on the fly to what the quarterback needs.
So a lot of that's got to be about this quarterback wide receiver relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, like going into the Super Bowl, talking to guys at the 49ers and stuff, and they're saying how hard it was, and hearing people on TV talk about it too, how hard it is for teams to prepare for Travis Kelce because it's sort of like a lot more freelancing, mm-hmm. a lot more like Mahomes knows where he's going to end up. And he knows where he's going to end up, but how he gets there is a little bit,
for sure.
TBD. You know, you've played with a bunch of different quarterbacks now, but specifically with Tua and you and you know, Tyreek and Waddle is have, you know, one of the top wide receiver duos. Like, how do you go about building that kind of chemistry with the quarterback?
Got to get in where you fit in, man. I mean, with my situation, having guys like Tyreek and Jalen, you got to find a way on the field, right? So I'm very different in what I bring to the table than those guys. So developing a relationship with the quarterback is kind of priority number one for me. So, you know, you want to be able to earn that trust. And a guy who's in my position, you get limited snaps, you get limited opportunities compared to most of the other guys. So you really have to be dialed in on the steps, the footwork, the angles, and at the end of the day, you got to catch the ball. You know what I mean? Like, when the ball is thrown to you, you got to come down with it. You drop one ball, and it's different than Tyreek dropping a ball. You know what I mean? It kind of goes across the board, across the league. Like,
yeah, you have a very small margin of error.
Yeah, and not only from a coaching perspective of, oh, maybe we don't trust this guy as much, but from a general relationship perspective, and that chemistry that you're looking for me, like, when Tua throws me the ball, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I catch it first. So that's always, it's very simple. It's very basic, but it's a great way to start the relationship is just when the ball is thrown to you, make the play. That's it. End of story. And then you can get the footwork. You can get the details down later. But when a quarterback throws it to you and you catch it, whether it's a good ball or a bad ball, that's going to build the trust that then you can develop your relationship. You can develop the route concepts and the timing and being in sync with one another. And you talk about Travis Kelce and how he freelances stuff. That's his game. That's what makes him great. And ultimately that's what you want out of the dynamic, the quarterback receiver dynamic. So something I had in high school, something I had in college, something I'm still working on to get in the NFL. So you just need ops.
And that goes, I would think too, to the relationship beyond the field. Like, you and Tua are good friends. We all played golf together.
Yeah.
Tua, super nice guy, very average golfer, but yeah, very nice guy. That how does that all go into it too?
It just takes effort. Yeah. I mean,
like, have you ever had a quarterback where you're like, I don't get along with this guy, or see maybe with other people, like guys who aren't friends off the field at all, but then have this great chemistry on the field?
Not necessarily. I mean, I may have had a couple guys that, like, you know, I didn't necessarily see eye to eye with, or they didn't really respect what I was doing, or I didn't respect what they were doing, but it hasn't really been the case in Miami. You know, like, Tua and I are great friends off the field. And I think it really starts with just, being a good person, you know? And I think that's what made Tua and I kind of gravitate towards each other is right when I got to Miami, I actually reached out to Tua before I got there. Before I met him, kind of like through text, you know, got his number, sent him a text, just said, you know, excited to be here or whatever. And he reached back and he was real friendly through his text. The week I got there, he invited me and my dad over to his house and we kind of hung out with his family and kind of kicked it off from there. And, you know, when somebody opens up their door to their home and brings you in, and not only you, but your dad, I think it's just kind of a, just let you know what kind of person they are. And so right off the bat, you know, I was like, man, this guy Tua is a great dude. He opened up his home to my family. And then our wives get along and they're friends now and they're close friends. So having the families connect and hang out, and, you know, we did Thanksgivings, dinners, and Christmas, all that stuff is, I think it's super important. I think it correlates right to the field, because not only are you guys building the trust, but you're wanting the connection to build on the field because of the relationship you have outside of the field. But
trust you as a person, more likely they're going to trust you to catch the pass.
I think so.
So you and I have known each other, I think, for 11 years now, right? You graduated high school 2013?
Yeah.
So 11 years. And what rated recruit were you?
I don't even know if I was.
Two stars, maybe?
I think something like that, yeah.
But coming from a very powerful high school program.
Yeah, that's where I got my stars. Yeah. Was the school. It wasn't the player. It was the school.
Like, God, this guy's team's so good. Let's throw him.
He must be all right.
Yeah, let's throw him a star too. So let's call it a two-star out of Santa Margarita High School here in Orange County. State champions, number one in the country preseason for your senior year. At that time, if you were trying to think 10 years, 11 years into the future, did you really think you were going to be an NFL player?
You know, I always wanted to. I actually grew up wanting to be a baseball player, but I always kind of had like professional athlete on my mind. I never really knew how it would go. I've kind of always focused on like the moment that I'm in, and I've never really focused on the future, which has kind of backfired a little bit. But, you know, going through high school, just, you know, opportunities for college, I never really thought about, like, I never dreamed of being a college football player. I knew it was like a part of the process, but, you know, I didn't sit there and fantasize about which college I was going to go to and how it was going to play out. And was I going to be a starter? Was I going to be a backup? Like all the things that I think most guys do actually think about, I never really thought about it. And once I got to college, it was kind of the same thing with the NFL. Like I was playing college, and then NFL didn't really become it was always an interest, but it didn't really become relevant until my senior year. I blew my knee out. My season was over. And then I thought about, okay, well, what's next? So, well, I got to get ready for the NFL. So that was kind of the first time I actually really thought about what I had to do to get to the NFL. I always knew that I wanted to be there, but I didn't necessarily maybe take the proper steps, I would say.
Yeah. So is that what you mean when you say focusing on the present rather than the future sometimes was a mistake?
I think it's good and bad, you know, because it's good to be in the present. It's good to focus on what you're doing now. I mean, people say it all the time, and I do believe that it is important, but not thinking about, you know, as far as like a high school player, not thinking about recruitment and stuff, I think that's not good. You know, I think those are things you need to think about, and you need to think about what's important and in your future, and whether it's, you know, going to a Stanford or a Washington State, you know, with academics, like it's something that you need to think about. And I didn't. So that's probably something I would redo if I could do it again.
Did you feel like your confidence to become a future NFL player got shaken when you got hawked by your 350-pound strength coach?
No, not at all.
All right, so to clarify for the people at home, so I was Riv's strength coach, getting ready to go from high school off to Washington State, and we had maybe like you and a dozen other guys, a lot of your high school teammates, you know, so we're guys going to Washington State, Colorado, who else is in this group? I mean, Northern Colorado, but then Boise State, Cal.
Utah. We had a good crew.
Yeah, good crew. Yeah. And we were playing this game one day, this little conditioning game. It was like rugby, but we play with a medicine ball and two-hand touch, not tackle. But, you know, having the little extra demand of the conditioning with carrying around the medicine ball. And we must have had odd numbers, so your boy had to hop in and barefoot, 350-pound professional strongman. I mean, maybe I had an angle on you, but
hey,
just for the record, did I in fact catch you?
I'll give you your flowers. You caught me. Yeah. You hawked me. It was bad. You've never let me live it down.
Nope.
But.
And I never will. So look forward to that.
Hey, I'll give it to you. You got me.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be like your kid's high school graduation. I'm going to be there giving a speech for some reason and be like.
Back in the day.
Yeah, I know what this is about, your high school graduation. But do you remember at the time? Yeah, so I just wanted to get that on the record there to make sure everyone knew that, yes, I did have the ability to catch a NFL wide receiver in a foot race. So if any teams are really desperate, really, really desperate, I'm probably not your guy. But so you go and have a very successful career at Washington State, playing for the legendary, infamous, maybe, Mike Leach. And as you mentioned as well, torn ACL senior year. So as that comes to the draft, really, you know, hurts your draft prospects. Do you think without the torn ACL, you get drafted?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I think maybe just based on the numbers that I had.
Yeah. As you were 2-time all Pac-12.
Yeah.
And then you took my Golden Bears for 3 touchdowns one game?
Twice.
2 times. Okay. Yeah.
Well. 6 tutties against them. That was a game I got hurt too. Damn. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I know that it wasn't like I wouldn't have been like a top draft, obviously. But I do think like had I not been hurt, I probably would have snuck into the later rounds. Like I said, based on my numbers. And I was so bitter at that time. You know, I was hurt, but I was going through a lot at that time. You know, I got the invite to the combine stripped, and also the knee itself was a bummer. And then 5 months into the recovery, I break my foot. So it's kind of the deal, but I don't know. I mean, I ran all the numbers. Like, I was real into it at the time. And there were 2 guys in the draft that had better numbers than me. One was Cooper Kupp, who I think he's done pretty well for himself.
Pretty well, yeah.
The other guy was Gabe Marks, who leads the Pac-12 in receiving history.
Your teammate.
My teammate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I was number 3 out of all the guys in the draft. So I was kind of like.
On college stats.
College stats. Yeah. College stats, yeah. So I was kind of like, all right, like, yeah, maybe I don't like size up to, you know, be a top 3-4 round guy. But my numbers alone should speak some for themselves. And I had a lot of tape. I mean, there's one thing about Washington State in the offense, it gets knocked a lot. It's a system, whatever. But at the end of the day, we were running routes 70 times a game versus most team who were running 30 times a game. Yeah. So,
and you were a 4-year starter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was a 4-year starter. I had a lot of tape. You know, I caught a lot of footballs over there. I had over 200 catches. So I had a lot of tape. So I was kind of like, somebody's going to take a chance. But you know what? It worked out. It is what it is. It sucks. I do wish I would have had the draft status, but.
Well, and so, you know, draft a couple weeks away right now. And I'm sure, you know, of the dozens and dozens of guys about to get drafted who are probably watching this right now, maybe hundreds, maybe all, every single guy.
Maybe everyone.
Yeah, they're probably watching. You know, only about half of the players in the NFL were actually drafted. Mm-hmm. Half of them have come through undrafted free agent route that you have. Mm-hmm. So I think those guys got to know it's not the end of the world.
No,
you're going on year 7 in the league.
8.
You're 8.
Yeah, in the going league. On 8.
Sorry to sell you short there.
Yeah.
So what is that undrafted free agent process like?
It's challenging. It presents its own challenge. And at the end of the day, everybody's story is different. Like I said, I got injured, so I didn't go through the typical undrafted process of maybe you get signed right after the draft. Maybe they give you a little signing bonus, whatever it is. I didn't have that. I didn't go to rookie camp. They have these little mini camps that you can get invited to, which I think is like a couple days long. I didn't have that. So I was hurt
in the pre-draft process, the mini camps in the pre-draft, like the.
No. This is after the draft. So after the draft is when the free agents start to get signed, and a lot of them get signed. You know, a lot of them are getting called during the draft saying, hey, you know, if we don't pick you, then you know, we want you to come to our team and we'll give you this or whatever it is.
Or it's like Mr. Irrelevant comes off the board and then it's just like a frenzy of phone calls.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I got zero calls. So that was a tough day. But I was hurt. So I kind of like, you know, it was a tough process. It was really tough mentally.
Well, that's just knocking, gotta be knocking the ego so hard too. Cause
for sure. For sure.
Cause I think fans forget that a lot of times. It's like even guys who are low on the depth chart or, you know, scraping to make a team on the bubble, making teams, that guy was probably the best or one of the best players on his college football team.
Oh, for sure.
He was probably the best player on his high school team. Yeah. He was likely the best player ever at his high school.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the talent level is crazy. And I've been surrounded by it for so long that, you know, it's, you can kind of see early on now from my perspective, the guys who will kind of last, right? Like the guys where you're like, oh, this guy was a superstar in college, but I can see through year one that he might last 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, and
because it's like such a hit to their ego to have to like,
take that back seat.
Yeah.
It's tough. Yeah. And, you know, for me, like my own journey, you know, I was 95% in the slot in college. I mean, I was never outside unless there was a weird motion. I mean, I played way too many snaps to have 95% in the slot. You know, I was only in the slot. So coming to the NFL, I'm thinking, okay, I kind of do fit the mold of the guys who have paved the way. They're white guys. But, you know, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, like, these guys have paved the way for guys like me, right?
Wayne Corbett
throwback.
Don Beebe.
Ooh, Beebe. How about Chad Beebe?
Is that a son?
Yeah, he's about my age.
That might be Don Beebe's son, then.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it is. Yeah, but these guys have, like, paved the way. So coming into the NFL, I was kind of like, okay, like, most teams should look at me in a light of this is a potential slot guy, right? And then I kind of quickly found out that it's not really the way it works. And it really depends on the offense you're in. But I found myself on the outside playing outside receiver, which I always thought was kind of a big, fast guy. And then I kind of thought, like, your savvy, technical guy was in the slot, which is what I did my whole career. And I got to the NFL, and they were like, no, you're outside. I'm like, well, how am I going to? I was like, this is a completely different game out here. And I was like, I haven't been doing this for 8 years. I've been doing the other stuff. And I've had to learn. I've had to adapt and learn how to run routes that I'm not the most comfortable with, like go balls. I mean, it's not a specialty. I'm not a super fast receiver. So I'm like, all right, I got to figure out how to do this because this is my only way on the field. You know what I mean? So it's been challenging, but it has been fun.
So the early part of your career, start with the Broncos. Uh-huh. 2 years with them, most of 2 years.
Doing some change.
Doing some change. Then some change with the Eagles. Very.
A cup of coffee.
Yeah.
A couple weeks.
Yeah. Very. Last little bit of loose change in the cup holder kind of thing.
Yep.
And then to the San Francisco 49ers for two full seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So bouncing around all those teams, if you could go back to draft day and no calls come, what advice are you giving to young River?
Something I never did growing up until I got to San Francisco. So after the Broncos, after the Eagles, after the failed tryouts and all that stuff, was I kind of lost the fun. You know what I mean? Like, I lost I didn't lose the passion, but I lost fun. Like, I didn't have fun. You know, it was kind of always a job. I was that guy who was getting cut every other week. That part obviously isn't fun, but you have to, like, my dad always says, stop and smell the roses. And I've always felt like if I stopped and smelled the roses, that I would be complacent with where I was at and I wouldn't work any harder. So I always kind of, like, anytime there was a moment to take in, I didn't do it. You know, like, hindsight, my first college game, we're playing at Auburn. Very cool moment that it's probably the biggest stadium I ended up playing in my college career. And I didn't really take it in. You know, I was so focused on doing what was important, you know, doing my job, whatever, that I didn't really get to take in the cool moments like that. So if I could go back to that moment right after the draft, like having fun needs to be important. And ultimately, I think you have more success when you're enjoying what you're doing. So that was like that's the biggest piece of advice I have that I think is, I see so many guys that are still in my class that are just battling and grinding, but they're not having fun. They're not enjoying it. And it's tough to see. And I see rookies come in every single year and they're so hyper-focused and they just want to do the right thing and they're not enjoying the moment. And it's like, I think people in those positions need to realize that the more you enjoy the moment, the better you're actually going to perform, you know? And I think it takes an effort to connect with the guys in the room. And that's something I never did even until I got to Miami, was put an effort in to make sure, let me make sure I'm friends with these guys. Like, I want to have a good time. I want to have fun. I want to be friends with Tyreek. Dude's going to be in the Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? Like,
do you feel like that kind of came about because you've always felt like, well, it's like someone who moves a lot when they're a kid. Maybe they feel like they don't need to make friends at that school because they're about to go to another school. They're like,
there's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a little, but it's kind of feeling like, probably to what you're saying, like you're not really fitting in, you know? And like my time in Denver and my time in San Francisco, I never really played receiver. You know, I was all special teams. So as much as I wanted to fit in and be one of the guys in the room, it was real tough because I wasn't doing the same things they were doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I was kind of on this lower level of, you know, I'm scraping and clawing just to be on the game day roster every week. And even when I am on the roster, I'm not in the huddles on offense. You know, I'm not out there grinding with the guys. Like, I'm over here on special teams doing my thing, which is fun. It's like, it's a great way to get on the field, but
You didn't grow up dreaming about one day I'm going to be a punt gunner.
You definitely don't think that. I mean, and that's like a humbling thing. You know, I didn't play any special teams in high school and college. I mean, I probably would have if they asked me, but I was always playing offense.
Yeah, you're so busy being the wide receiver.
Busy being the wide receiver. And, you know, you get to the NFL and it's just different. You know, there's only a few guys on the team that only play offense or defense. Everybody plays special teams. So that was new to me, and I think that's new to most guys that come in.
How many times have you been cut?
14.
Yeah, 14.
Yeah.
I remember one of those times very distinctly. I'm sure you do even more distinctly, is right before that NFC Championship game against the Rams with the Niners. I know that one hurt extra.
Yeah.
And so the week before that was your last game with the 49ers. Mm-hmm. And then there were some changes that happened. Mike McDaniel gets the job as the head coach for the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. What was that moment like, that process like, of signing with Miami for the first time?
Scary. It was scary. So there is a cool story to it, I think, from my perspective now. So we play Green Bay, right? This is 2021. Mm-hmm. We play Green Bay. We win.
22.
No. I was in Miami in 22. January of 22. Yeah. So we're playing Green Bay.
Freezing ass cold.
It's very cold. It's in the negatives. It's snowing. We beat Aaron Rodgers in Lambeau. Very cool moment. Something I'll always remember. After that game,
a fungus steals her shine on what should have been the punt block touchdown.
He saw it at the last second. Oh, man, I wanted that one. But that was a super fun game. And we're playing the Rams the following week in the NFC Championship. And, long story short, they cut me the day before the game. They actually fly me out with the team to LA. I was still on the team come Friday, and the game was Sunday. And on Saturday, they sat me down. John Lynch sat me down and, you know, told me the bad news. And it was kind of just a shitty feeling.
Yeah. And mind you, you'd been playing like every special team in all the games leading up.
Yeah. I mean, I played zero offense.
Yeah.
But as far as special teams go, I was a core four guy. I was on every unit and I was, you know, the starter for special teams. And I had started for 8 games. So it definitely caught me by surprise because, you know, I didn't think this was a time to make changes after things had been going well. I was playing well myself for my role. And yeah, it took, caught me by surprise, and it sucked. That one hurt. That one probably hurt the most out of anything, because everybody dreams of playing the NFC Championship, chance to go to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's a...
Yeah, I rode up to that game with your parents.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was in L.A. That's basically home for me. I had probably over 20 people there. I mean, it was a huge moment for everyone, and I get cut the day before the game, so that sucked. I mean, there's no way to, I don't know. I mean, it was just terrible. But moving forward to the Dolphins, so I get cut that day, and I fly back with the team the next day back to San Francisco. Season's over. We lost, right? And I'm doing these little exit interviews, right? So you go in, you meet with these coaches, and they kind of tell you what was good and bad about the season. My situation was obviously a little bit weird because everybody knew that I had just got cut before the game. So meeting with the coaches was a lot of, you know, I'm sorry, wish it worked out differently and things like that. But, you know, I wasn't that close with Mike McDaniel in San Francisco. Like, not like I am now. As far as the receivers go, he came into the room every now and then. He gave his 2 cents. He talked to us on the field every now and then.
So he was the run game coordinator, right? I mean, that's his official title.
My second year, he was the run game coordinator. I forget his role the first year, but he had went up the second year to run game coordinator. And yeah, I think he was a lot more involved kind of with the quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I kind of was doing my due diligence. I stopped by Wes Welker's office and stopped by Shanahan, stopped by John Lynch, stopped by all those guys. Everybody said, oh, you know, it was kind of just the way it worked out. We want you back next year. We're going to sign you to a futures deal. So this is where things get complicated, because a futures deal is basically an invite to spring camp, right? Yeah. OTAs. It's basically what it means.
It's like we're giving you a contract to give you a contract.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's not the greatest thing in the world. Yeah. I've signed a futures deal almost every year of my career. So it's an opportunity. But it's nothing, you know, nothing guaranteed or anything.
Like a save the date.
It's a save the date. Yeah. It's a save the date, basically. Yeah. So I meet with, I wasn't with Lynch actually. So what happened was I had met with all the guys, not Mike, hadn't met with him yet. Wasn't even planning on doing it. And somebody comes down and grabs me from the bottom level of the facility, brings me upstairs where all the coaches' offices are. And they say, hey, come over here in this room. I say, okay. At this point, I don't know what's going on. I'm already technically off the team because they had cut me 2 days prior. But they bring me up. They say, hey, this is your futures contract. We need you to sign this. So that's kind of how they present it to you. They don't really, they want to present it to you without an option. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I do think that it takes a little bit of balls to not sign it right there. You know, it's very scary. I've been in the moment and signed it before when I knew I was going to sign it. I was very bitter about being cut the day before the NFC Championship. I had been cut multiple times throughout that year anyways. And I was kind of like, man, these guys obviously don't believe in me, right? You know, they proved it 2 days ago when they cut me before the big game, and they've cut me all year, and I played zero snaps of offense this year. I was like, there's no future for me here. You know, I love the 49ers. I love being here. I love the guys, but obviously there's a lack of faith in my playing ability, right? So it's kind of like, all right, I had to consider all this in the moment. So I'm like, I looked at whoever it was that brought me up, and I said, hey, I got to call my agent. I felt like that was an appropriate response. And he was kind of like, oh yeah, go ahead, take your time. So I walked downstairs, I walked outside, I called my agent, said, hey man, the 49ers just offered me the futures deal, and I want to go somewhere else, basically. I said, if there's anyone out there that believes in me and wants to give me a chance, I will go anywhere else. That's kind of the point I was at with San Francisco. And it was a bummer because I was familiar with the system. I think the coaches liked me as a person. You know, I had good relationships there. I had great relationships with the players. Like, I really did love it there. But the fact that I knew I was never going to get on the field, I was like, I got to do this for me, you know? So I call my agent. I tell him that. And he says, all right, like, you know, clock's kind of ticking because I got to go back up there and sign this contract. And my agent calls me back about 30 minutes later. And he says, hey, basically nobody wants you. I was like, ah, heard that before. So I was kind of like, all right, my only option is to sign this futures contract. Coming back to the 49ers, it's going to be another long year. You know, I'm probably going to get it cut a bunch of times. And I had basically accepted it within that 5-minute span of receiving that call from my agent and then walking back in the building. And as I'm walking into the building about to walk up to sign, I just popped in Mike's office, Mike McDaniel's office. And I was kind of just like, hey, dude, see you in a couple months. I'm going to sign back, whatever. And he's like, hey, come in, close the door. And I was like, all right. So I closed the door and he's like, hey, you know, Mike's personality is, he's got a lot of jokes. He's pretty funny. But he brings me in and he's like, hey, man, like, I don't know if you read the internet at all, but I'm up for a head coaching job. And I honestly did not know. I was like, oh, shit, no, I didn't know that. And he goes, yeah, I'm interviewing for the Dolphins on, you know, it was Monday. The day was Monday that this happened because we played Sunday. Mm-hmm. The exit interview was Monday. He says, hey, I'm interviewing for the Dolphins on Wednesday. He goes, I think I'm going to get it. And I was like, oh, like, nice, congrats.
Not even thinking, like, this has any impact on you. Just
not
like,
at all.
Congrats, Mike. That's good for you.
Yeah, I was like, awesome, dude. That's
I just
great.
Got told no one wants to sign me, but congratulations to you.
Yeah, basically. I was like, oh, man. No, but I was happy for him. I mean, I knew he was kind of the brains of the operation. So I was like, yeah, doesn't surprise me at all. But anyways, he looks at me and he goes, you want to come with me? And I was like, shit, there's my opportunity right there. I told him right away. I said, absolutely. I said, I didn't even know you believed in me like that. He said, I've been watching you in practice. He said, I see you studying the tape. I see you doing it on practice field. He goes, you haven't gotten the ops in the game, but he goes, I want you to come over to Miami. And I was like, shoot, man. Like, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, you don't even have a job yet. Like, You know, so I got very real with him. I told him my situation. He didn't know much about contracts and futures deals and what that meant or anything. So basically when you sign the futures deal, that does lock you in at least for that team. So you can't sign a futures deal and then Mike goes to Miami and then you can sign over there, sign and works, you know? So, what I told Mike was, I said, hey man, I said, hey, look, here's the deal. They just offered me a futures deal here in San Fran. And I was actually on my way to go sign it when I popped in here. And I told him the situation with my agent and how no teams wanted me, blah, blah. And he says, all right, look, he goes, I can't guarantee you anything, but he goes, if I get the head coaching job for the Dolphins, I will sign you the first day I get the job. And he goes, I will guarantee you an opportunity. He goes, I won't guarantee you a spot, none of that. He goes, but I will give you an opportunity to compete. And I was like, shoot, man, that's all I want. Because I kind of felt like in San Fran that, you know, those opportunities were not, I just felt like a body.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you just kind of get pegged as like, okay, this is a practice squad guy. And
yeah, it's like, all right, this guy's going to work hard for us. He's going to show up every day. He's not going to be any issues.
It's like you got friend zoned.
Yeah, I basically got friend zoned there. Yeah.
Like no amount of glow up is getting you out of the friend zone with this girl or with this team.
Yeah, I really don't know that any type of elevated play would have helped my case in San Fran at the time. I think they had kind of pegged me as this guy who would never play receiver for them, but they liked having me around. I mean, I think I'm a good person, and I connect with the guys.
Everyone I know there loved you.
So. Yeah, I mean, I loved it there. I really did. But, yeah, I knew they weren't going to play me, so that is an issue when you're a football player.
Yeah.
But, so, anyways, going back to Mike. So, he tells me he thinks he's going to get the job. I said, okay. I said, Mike, look, if you want me to come with you, I have to say no to this contract. And if I say no to this contract and then you don't get the job, I'm screwed because no one else wants me. And I promise you, if I say no to the Niners right now, they will not give me another contract. So he was very confident that he was going to get the job. So, which is cool. You know, hindsight, looking at it, it's like, wow, the ball's on that guy. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? And so he told me that, and I said, shoot, man, all right. I stepped outside his office. I called my agent. I said, hey, I'm going to Miami. He said, Mike McDaniel thinks he's going to get the job, so this is my plan. I'm not going to sign this contract. I said, what do I do? Do I go up there? Do I tell him? What do I say? And he was like, leave, just leave. And I got my car right there. Didn't go back up to tell him I wasn't signing. I just got my car and I drove 6 hours to Southern Cal. Just drove home right there.
I guess then too, in the event that Mike didn't get the job, you'd be like, guys, I had the shits. I had to go. I couldn't stay to sign the contract. I still want to sign it.
Yeah, no. So how it ended up working out was I definitely felt in the moment that if I didn't sign it that day, that it was gone.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. I left. I did what my agent said, and which ultimately worked out. But it was, I was scared, you know?
For sure.
You know, football career potentially ending right here, right? Like, it's a huge gamble.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, Mike McDaniel predicting that he's going to get it is one thing. If he didn't get it, he still got his job at San Francisco. But now he's telling you, you got to give your job up on the chance that he gets it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was,
they're making a big leap of faith, a bet on him.
It was nerve wracking. So to add on to the story, so that was a Monday. I drove home. You know, I was real excited about what could happen. I knew the interview was Wednesday. He told me in his meeting when I met with him, he said, hey, when the news breaks and you see it, call me. I said, okay. So Wednesday comes around and the Brian Flores incident happens that week. So Mike's interview gets pushed back to Friday. And then things start adding up with more of the Brian Flores stuff. And then it gets pushed back to the next Monday and then the next Wednesday. So I was thinking initially that every day I don't sign this contract with the Niners, my career might be over.
Yeah.
You know, so it was very scary for me. But, you know, ultimately, I think it was like maybe 10 days after that conversation with Mike, which was a long 10 days for me. The news broke that he got the job and I was lost it. I was with my dad. I was fired up. I couldn't believe it. And I call him and he didn't answer. I was like, oh shit. I was like, no way. And, you know, in the back of my head, I'm thinking like a number of things can be happening, right? Like,
yeah,
he obviously just got a head coaching job. Everybody's probably blowing him up.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're like, what if he doesn't follow through? Like, he told me he was going to bring me. He told me to call him. He didn't pick up. So I was like, shit, like, what am I going to do? So I followed it up with a text, felt like that was appropriate. And then the next day he got back to me and he,
did you double text him?
I did not double text him.
Not like an hour later, send him like 4 question marks.
Yeah, this happening or, yeah, no, no, I think he understood that a lot was at stake, but he probably
2 a.m. You up?
Yeah, basically. But yeah, he got back to me. And I kind of like took matters a little bit into my own hands. I told my agent that Mike had said, hey, he was going to sign me if he got the job. So I was like, hey, when he got the job, I had my agent call Chris Greer. And basically my agent was like, hey, Chris, Mike said this type of thing. And then Chris went to Mike and Mike was like, yeah, but I was the first guy he signed. So he stayed true to his word. I flew out there the next week. Signed. It was such a big relief. And but that's just where the story starts, you know, like Mike telling me that I was going to have an opportunity can mean a number of different things, right? And you know, it's, are you having the opportunity to be the starting receiver? Are you having an opportunity to do my same role in San Fran with just special teams? Or am I a practice squad guy? Like, what's the op? You know, it was never really like black and white what it was. But what the coolest part was bringing a familiar face over there, like myself and a few other guys. But in the receiver room, bringing myself over there, I was ahead of the game because I had been in the offense for 3 years. And
yeah, you get to like step into kind of a leadership role.
You do. Yeah, you do. And it's cool, you know, and you know, you sign guys like Tyreek and Jalen Waddle's already there and the whole receiver room is different now.
Like Tyreek. Let me show you how this one's done here.
Yeah, exactly.
What you're going to want to do is you run faster than everyone.
And yeah.
You just do whatever you want then.
It's a side story. It's very hard to watch and replicate what he does, but it's hard because he breaks a lot of the rules as receivers. You know, it's a lot of stay skinny, you know, slip, misdirection, you know, those are kind of the basic fundamentals of receiver, and you're always selling vertical and things like that. Tyreek can literally just like run around people.
Mm-hmm.
Like he kind of goes against the normal stuff. So it's really hard to watch and be like, oh yeah, I can learn from that. I can learn from that. Like I just watch, it's just for fun. It's like YouTube highlights, you know, you just watch them and you're like, that's cool. But yeah, stepping into that leadership role was new. It was unique. It was what I was in college. Like I always prided myself on being the smartest one in the room and understanding things and understanding the full picture rather than just what I'm doing. And it really paid dividends going to Miami.
So you have a quote, I think, on your Twitter. It says, the beauty in being doubted is that it grants you opportunities to prove them wrong.
Mm.
You know, I've seen you get doubted in, you know, from afar in some of the situations like in San Francisco getting cut or whatever, you know, right in front of my face at a joint practice, Niners and Chargers joint practice a couple of years ago when, you know, Derwin, you were about to get in a fight with Derwin James and Joey Bosa.
Yeah. Not my best moment.
It wouldn't have.
Like, I hope that one would have ended well.
Yeah, I was watching it and I was like, way to mix it up in there, right? Way to stand up for yourself. And then Joey Bosa grabbed you from behind and I was like, shit. Yeah. But I was like, hopefully Nick jumps in for you there. Nick Bosa. Hey, big bro, let's laugh this guy. But, you know, so to see, you know, and it definitely happens, I think, in, you know, you're a smaller white wide receiver in the NFL. Like that's a lot of people going to doubt you. Is there a moment that stands out in your mind as like, this was the prove them wrong moment?
Just any time in my career.
Yeah. And with Miami particularly.
The third preseason game that we had in Miami was against Philly and my first time getting into the end zone in the NFL. So I was year six. I had not been in the end zone, not in the preseason, not in the regular season, nothing. And that whole offseason and training camp was different for me because previously, like with the Niners and with the Broncos, every team that I had been on, I had kind of been like penciled in as like the fifth, sixth guy at one position. So really I'm like 10 deep, right? Like I'm not even in the ballpark. And with Miami, I kind of started out my time there as, hey, Riv, teach, you know, Tyreek this position because you know it best in the room. You know, and it was me and Trent Sherfield. Mm-hmm. So basically, I was with Tyreek and Trent was with Waddle. And both of us knew the playbook very well. We were kind of those guys that were knew the playbook like front and back, you know. And so we stepped into those leadership roles of understanding that, you know, obviously these guys are the starters, but we can help them if you do it the right way, right? So that was the role that I was kind of thrusted into from the beginning was, hey, you're a two, which was new to me because usually I was the four or five at one position. And I was kind of like, hey, no. You work directly with these guys and you get them up to speed so that we can perform and you can be their backup and fill in. And I was like, hell yeah. Like I hadn't been penciled in at a two at any time in my career, you know? And, you know, in that year they drafted people, like they wanted other guys to do it, but they also understood that I had been in the offense for so many years and what I brought to the table was valuable, you know? So it was very cool for me to be in that position. And to answer your question, the moment that I felt like it was kind of through the offseason because I was actually a two. I was actually running with Tua, you know, most of the time through OTAs and training camp. I was always running with the twos, the threes, the fours. And for this one in Miami, I was running with Tua. I was like, so this is new. You know, I'm catching balls from Tua in the spring. Things are flowing. Things are going as I want them to go, you know. And when we got to the Philly game, Tyreek played. So it was the third preseason game. He's only three now, right? And Tyreek had not played in the first one. The second one, this game was at home versus Philly. And Tyreek kind of made his Dolphins debut. First play of the game, throw a bomb to him for like 50 yards. It was sweet. And second play of the game, they run like a keeper. Hit him on the left side. He's rolling out to the left. hit him for like another 15-yard gain. So Tyreek just takes us right down the field. And the funny part about this story is Tyreek and I have developed a good friendship, and he had told me prior to the game, he was like, I'm going to let you get one. I said, dude, you let me get one or two touchdowns this year. That's all I need. I said, I'll be happy. I said, just let me get a couple. That's it. And he was like, I got you. I was like, all right, you know, not thinking anything was going to actually happen. He's not going to do anything about it. He catches those two balls. We're on like the 11-yard line. Tyreek comes running out and he's waving at me like, come get me. And I was like, all right, you know, so I run out there, go in, and we ran the exact same play, actually, the keeper that he caught, but I was at a different position. And they threw it to me, touchdown, and it was my first touchdown. It was overwhelming feeling. My parents were there. It was the coolest feeling ever. Come running onto the sidelines. I got Tua, Tyreek, Jalen, Trent. Like, all the boys are coming up congratulating me. They knew what it meant to me. They knew that I had never been in the end zone. Wes gave me a big hug. Like, you know, he had been with me for 2 years. Didn't play any receiver for him over there in San Fran. And, like, they knew what a big moment it was for me to finally have some success, you know? So that was my moment where I was like, all right, this is all worth it because of this.
So my moment for you, the one I was hoping you were going to say, but was your first touchdown in the regular season.
Oh, so yeah, go ahead.
So against the Ravens, week two or three?
Two.
And you guys are down 21.
Yeah. Right?
So Nick, like River's best friend, best man, and I are friends as well. So we're at Wild Goose watching the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're like, oh, shit, River's in. And then you score a touchdown. and we're losing our minds.
Yeah.
I'm buying Classe Azul shots, you know, anyone who wants it. And that ends up sparking the comeback, and you guys come back from down 21 to win the game.
Yeah.
Like, what was that moment like?
So that was pretty surreal, but there were some things that I wish it had been different for your first. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we were down, so there's no celebrating, right?
I guess you didn't know that you were going to come back.
We did not know we were going to come back. You know, that is a very unique story too. So what happened in that game was we were down 21. Tyreek had to get an IV. I think it was the second quarter that we were in. And Tyreek had to go to the locker room and get an IV. So Wes looks at me. He's looking at Sed Wilson. And he's like, all right, you guys are going to handle this role until Tyreek's back, basically. So we were like, all right, let's do it. You know, I'm pumped. Sed had already been a dude before. So he was like, all right, finally. But I was super fired up because I actually got to play some receiver. I think I had 5 snaps in the first game at receiver, nothing important. And so we're going through the game, and something happens where Sed ends up bumping into the slot, and he's kind of taking that full time, and we're running this 11 personnel kind of down the field. So it was Jalen and Sed, and then me. So I got to get a lot of burn at that Z position, which was Tyreek's spot. And the story that I was told was that we marched down, and we're on the actually it was a 1 yard touchdown. So we were on the 1 yard line, and Tyreek comes running out, forgets his helmet in the locker room. So he forgets his helmet in the locker room. So he's just sitting there ready to go in, but he doesn't have a helmet. So they go running in to get the helmet while Tyreek's sitting there. And that's when I scored my touchdown. So had Tyreek not forgot his helmet, I would have immediately came out, you know, like obviously, and I would have got that touchdown, and I wouldn't have been a part of that cool game. So that was cool. But we were in Baltimore, right? And my parents, they travel to every game. They don't miss games. It's so cool. But we're in Baltimore. And so before the game, you know, a few days before, I called my parents. I said, hey, look, guys, you came to the first game of the season versus the Patriots. I played 5 snaps. I said, I don't think I'm going to play a lot in this game, you know? So don't feel like you need to come to Baltimore. I actually told them not to come. I was like, I've never really been to Baltimore, but I don't think it's the best area. You know what I mean? So I told them not to come. I told my wife, Taylor, not to come. Nobody was there. So I was like, nobody come. And then, of course, I end up scoring my first touchdown.
And you're like, no one's ever coming to a game again.
yeah, basically.
Well, at least you got an extremely drunken FaceTime from me and Nick.
That was probably the coolest moment. Like, after the game, you and Nick sent me a video, which I still pull up every now and then just because it's a cool moment. Like, two people you really care about that care about you and are, like, expressing how they're feeling about you, like, when you succeed. Like, you guys showing me how happy you were through that video was so cool. It was like, and my parents did this, like, everyone was taking videos and wanted to kind of do the same thing, but you guys were my only friends that did it. And, like, not that, like, people need to do that, but I just thought it was so cool. And it's just a credit to both of you, because sitting in the locker room after the game and seeing the video that you guys sent me, obviously I'm overwhelmed with emotions. We won, I scored, I was a part of it. Like, it felt great. But then to see that and, like, what it meant to other people, the people that have helped you get to where you're at, it was like, it's one of the cooler feelings. And I'm thankful for you guys, for sure.
Well, we're proud of you. do you think that moment is what birthed the River Craycraft fan club?
I don't know. I don't know when that started. That dude is hilarious, though.
So, River Craycraft Fan Club is a Twitter account that my guess is started with some level of irony.
For sure, yeah.
That a lot. That how much of your social media interaction with then 49ers, now Dolphins fans, do you think is genuine? And how much is there?
Oh, like, it's all jokes, man. Yeah. Like,
they're like, this is a white guy with a weird name.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. The funniest one was people over social media was like, this looks like a Madden franchise after 20 years or something. Like, the name and the characters. I was like, oh, damn. But I don't know when that dude started that page, but yeah, I used to take a lot of heat in San Francisco. I mean, I was not happy about that. The fans are so passionate over there.
49ers Twitter and Instagram and stuff is terrible. Like, it's, I love the 49ers, like, but their fans on the internet are the worst.
Dude, they just look for things to hate. It's like, man, yeah. Like,
yeah. They're like so negative all the time. Like, so, let's have some faith.
You know, I didn't understand. I mean, it's not all of them, but no. There are a select few that they basically just bash on the team. Like, they bash on the players, they bash on the coaches, and they're just constant negative. And I'm like, how are y'all working with the team? Like, I don't understand why.
Yeah. But, okay, so River Craycraft Fan Club is all positivity.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But my only gripe with him is he's so active that if I'm actually trying to find real news about you on Twitter, like after a preseason game or something.
Yeah.
It's so hard to, because it's every one of, you know, I search River Craycraft and every tweet that he has, you know, 200 tweets he's made that day have come up. And some of them are about you, but not exclusively. Have you met that guy?
I have met him. He came to a game last year and he was wearing my jersey. Uh-huh. Like, I do think it started as jokes. And, like, I used to get all the time in San Francisco, like, the 49ers legend.
49ers legend, yeah.
You always make fun of me for it. and I hate it. I'm like, oh, man, like, this is so annoying. I used to get it in Philly, too. I was there for 2 weeks, and they're like, Eagles legend. I'm like, man. But that guy, he came to the game, and I met him, and he was wearing my jersey. And I've only seen, like, probably 3 or 4 people with my actual jersey on in a stadium. It's a cool feeling, right? Like, people you don't know wearing your jersey.
Non-family members.
Yeah. And you're like, hey, let me sign that for you, you know? It's like, funny,
when Nick and I were flying up to Dolphins Niners, and there was a guy with an 85 jersey on in the Orange County airport, which I don't know if it was because it was Orange County. I thought that there was more chance that it was yours, but it didn't cross my mind that it was anything but a River Craycraft jersey. But it was like a throwback jersey, you know.
No way.
For not a River Craycraft jersey, but.
Oh, it was like a duper jersey.
Yeah, it was a
duper jersey. Oh, okay. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, those are pretty popular.
I saw the guy, I was like, sick Craycraft jersey, and he's like, it's a duper, but yeah, go River.
Yeah, duper, what a guy. What a guy.
So do you give, like, the River Craycraft fan club guy, like, a lock of your hair or anything?
No. So I met him at the stadium, and they're like in the stadium, and I had him come down to, like, the railing, And I was like, let me get the jersey. Let me sign it for you. So I signed the jersey and I gave it back to him. And I was like, hey, I don't know if you're making this account as a joke or anything, but the fact that you're here, you have a jersey on, and whether it's jokes or not, you write all positive things about me. And the reality of the social media negativity world is it does play a factor sometimes. Like sometimes you go down the rabbit holes and you read these things and you're like, man, fuck these people. Like, you know, you're like, man, they don't even know me. Like they don't know what I've been through or anything. They're just bashing on me for no reason. But this guy's out here like talking about, you know, the work I'm doing. He's reposting videos. He's finding clips of me in games, like not even getting the ball, just doing good things. And he's putting it out in the world. It, like it's positive things. And like, whether it's jokes or not, this is what I told him. I said, dude, like, thank you. Like there's not a lot of people that write positive things out there. And I said, whether you're joking or not, like, I really do appreciate it because there's so much negativity. And especially in my career, especially in San Francisco, there was a lot of negativity on the internet. And I was like, just to have somebody writing good things about me, it makes me feel good. Like, I appreciate you. And I think he was super grateful to hear that. I think his response made me feel like it was real. Like,
I think it is. I mean, the RCFC, I think, is adding new members daily. And that I do see a lot of Dolphins fans like legitimately understand what you bring to the team there.
Yeah.
That if it's a tough third down catch, you're going to make it. Maybe you're not going to, you know, juke five guys after it like Tyreek and score a touchdown, but you're going to make the play that you need to make. You know, you're their best blocking wide receiver, pound for pound, best blocking wide receiver in the NFL. I'll say it. You heard it here first.
I'm not pointing that.
You heard it here first. But yeah, I do think it's genuine and they got a lot of love for you.
I think so for sure. And I signed his jersey. And then after the game, he tweeted, he said bittersweet moment because he can no longer wear the jersey. So I sent him a jersey so he could wear. I think he came to another game, but.
Well, I'm definitely expecting that he retweets this podcast. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. Just tag him in it. I'm sure he'll retweet it.
Yeah. All right. So wrapping up here, your favorite wide receiver, current or ever, to watch for you to learn from?
Wes Welker is a pretty obvious answer there. I mean, every kid that looked like me growing up was watching Wes Welker, and then they were watching Julian Edelman. You know, like those are the two guys that everybody wants to be like, right? I think Wes was kind of, I know he wasn't the first, but like at least for when I was growing up, that's when he was huge, right? Like to me, he changed the game, like the way he ran his routes and everything. You know what's kind of funny is watching him growing up, I always thought he ran his routes a certain way, and it wasn't until I started playing for him that I realized that it was actually completely different. So I tried to emulate his game through high school and college. I mean, like you try to find guys that you think are similar athletes to yourself, right?
And him, yeah, he played for Texas Tech for Mike Leach. You're at Washington State with Mike Leach.
Yeah, that helps. Same system. I actually watched a lot of his tape, him and Amendola at like his Tech tape that some of the coaches out there would give me when I was at Washington State, just because we actually played different positions in college. But yeah, but it was the same kind of deal. But watching Wes was probably the biggest influence, I'd say, just because I think looking at Wes, I think most people would agree upon this, even if you don't think he's the best player ever, like he gave hope to the less athletic guys, really. You know what I mean?
You know, what's interesting about Wes is you watch him play, and people who are familiar with combine times, 20-yard shuttle and three cone drill, you'd watch Wes Welker play football and think this guy probably ran a 3.8 shuttle and a 6.6 three cone drill because he's so quick. He plays so quick. He actually had really bad times in both of those, like a 4.6 shuttle. I mean, to the point where I was like, he had to have slipped. You know, yeah. It was like a 4.56 shuttle and a 7.3 cone drill.
Yeah, I don't think the 40 was great either.
No, maybe it was 4.56 40, 4.65 shuttle, but something. And where I was like, did they mix this up with like a lineman's time? But then he plays so fast, and I think that's just such a great testament to you know, film study and understanding how to put a receiver or put a defensive back off balance. And, you know, that you as a wide receiver, you know where you're going. They don't know where you're going. And to be able to use that to your advantage so well, where guys who, you know, might run 4.3 40s, they don't have that same ability, so they don't get the same separation.
Yeah, his value in setting people up and making people think he's going a different way was what made him successful. And that was one thing through watching tape that I didn't understand until I met him and learned from him directly of why he was doing the things he was doing. And another thing that helped Wes was he was very unorthodox. You know what I mean? Like, he's very intentional with his movements, but he's very unorthodox in his running style. Like, his arms are all over the place. His legs are all over the place. And I do think that helps. And I think you see that in guys like Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a reason. There's a reason that guys like that are successful.
Because probably harder, you know, if a defender is looking at this, they're trying to predict what you're going to do based on everything they've seen before.
Yeah.
Then they're like, well, we got crazy legs Craycraft coming at us right now. I don't know what to do with this. I've not seen this before.
And see, I'm not like that, though. Yeah. Like, that was something that I crazy had to... Crazy
legs Kelce.
Yeah.
New nickname. That one's for free.
Yeah. I had to learn that, though. Yeah. It was funny. Edelman told me, I was training with him a few years ago, and I was on the field training, like running routes, and I was basically trying to run just like him, mm-hmm. right? Like, he's at the peak of his career. He had won a couple Super Bowls. And I'm like, dude, I get the chance to train with Julian Edelman. Like, let me try and do things just like him. I studied his tape. I already tried to do things outside of training with him. And I'm training with him, and he stops and he looks at me and he's like, quit trying to fucking be like me, bro. And I was kind of like taken back. I was like, oh man, like, what's he talking about? You know? And then he explained himself. He's like, look, he's like, I learned from Wes. He goes, I'm a taller Wes. He goes, I can move a little bit like Wes, but I'm not the same player as him. He goes, you don't move like me. You move very differently. He goes, you have to create your own self, basically. He's like, you can't look at me and try to do the things I do. Not because you can't, but because you're built differently. You're taller than me. You're like whatever. So he was a little bit like shorter and stockier, and like, I'm a little bit taller and skinnier, and like, we just don't run the same. You know what I mean? So that was like probably the best piece of advice that I got, like training with people, where I was like, oh man, like one of my idols just came up to me and hit me with some real shit. You know what I mean? So I was always appreciated that. But from then on, I always tried to like be myself. That's why I say when I watch Tyreek, you know, like it's cool to pick things from them. But don't try to be like Tyreek. I mean, that's the obvious. Like, I'm a completely different receiver than him. I can still be successful, but like, don't try to run like him. Don't try to jump like him. Like, you got to do it in a different way. You got to find out what works for you.
Well, Riv, 2024, year 8 in the NFL.
Yeah.
Very proud of you, man.
Thanks, dude.
Excited. I actually got to make it out to Miami this year.
Yeah. You got to come out for sure.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right.
Play golf with my buddy, too, again.
There you go. Appreciate you, dude.
All right. Fins up, brother.
Fins up.